You are listening to the Riverfront Church Podcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more. I am Pastor Emma Horn, and I am sitting here with Kate Parker of the Delaware Center for Justice. And today we are thinking about the idea of justice. We're thinking about faith. We're thinking about real situations, what it is to kind of live into this work of justice. So tell us a little bit about what you do, who you are, where you came from, all of that.
Sure. Thanks so much for the opportunity to talk about the work that we do. And what drives us. My name's Kate Parker. I'm the policy director here at the Delaware Center for Justice. And DCJ is the leading institute in the state that provides direct services and advocacy efforts to all people who are touched by the criminal legal system. Mm-hmm. And our practice really informs our policy and the recommendations that we make for change, mm-hmm. to transform the quality of justice for all Delawareans. I started here in 2014. Before that, I was a criminal defense attorney for the Office of the Public Defender in New Jersey. I held that position for about 6 years after I graduated from law school and clerked for a judge. I had worked for the PD's office throughout my time in law school, and it saved my life. Mm. I didn't actually love law school. Okay. I loved the law. Uh-huh. I loved it. I loved what it could do. Mm-hmm. I loved the philosophy of it. But I didn't actually love law school. Mm-hmm. But I loved the people at the PD's office.
Okay.
And I loved their mission and commitment and working for people who were poor, who were caught up in the system, mm-hmm. And really giving them the very best defense that money could buy, mm-hmm. right? Before I went to law school, I came by law school. I was a little bit older when I went to school. I had worked at the University of Delaware for a couple of years after grad school. I worked on a children's mental health project. Mm-hmm. And we were doing an evaluation of some community-based services for kids who weren't doing that well in okay. their homes, in their schools, in their communities. And I went to law school because a lot of the kids in my program kept getting arrested.
Mm.
And I was naive enough to think that I could explain that, mm-hmm. right? That I could, well, they just don't know that they have mental health issues.
Okay.
They just don't know that these behaviors are a manifestation of this untreated illness.
Mm.
And if we can wrap them around in community services, we can help the child, we can help the family, we can help the entire community. And no one corrected me, right?
There it goes.
So no one told me like, oh, hey, we already know all of this.
Okay.
We just don't know exactly what to do with these kids.
Okay.
And so that was my first kind of great disillusionment with the law. And so I worked at the PD's office for years, and watched really, an oppressive system.
Mm.
One that was riddled with just perpetual unfairness
mm-hmm.
and inequity. And so the tension between wanting the law to be uniform and knowing also that it had to be individualized
mm-hmm.
created such disparities
mm-hmm.
in how people were treated.
Mm-hmm.
And we became, I think all of us, the first time we were there, the first time you're standing next to somebody who's in handcuffs, who's handcuffed to their belly, who's being shuffled into a courtroom, who's accused of some relatively minor
mm-hmm.
offense,
mm-hmm.
it's shocking.
Right. Right.
It's absolutely shocking. And then the first time somebody pleads guilty to something that you think maybe they didn't do,
mm-hmm.
it makes your stomach turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the months and over the years, you realize that you weren't there, that people are doing things to survive.
Mm-hmm, right.
And all you can do is facilitate that and represent their expressed interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it wears you down.
Yeah.
And then it's not just the person in handcuffs or in flip-flops without socks that's dehumanizing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the normal. It's not until you have somebody who's handcuffed to a walker that you start to say, oh, I'm not sure that that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the erosion of the shock
right.
value
mm-hmm.
Suggested to me that it was time to try to do something else.
Mm.
That the paper takes whatever ink you put on it.
Right.
And the laws themselves are written by people.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can educate and organize and advocate, we might get a different result for the people.
So we had you at worship yesterday for Riverfront Church 505 service.
Yes.
And one of the things that I love that I'm sure you probably just kind of standard do is asking the questions. How many of you haven't paid a bill? How many of you have? And then progressively getting deeper and deeper into those situations. And I'll admit it, when you were asking the question, I could only see the hands in front of me. I couldn't see the hands behind me. But in my head, I was thinking, what if someone was raising their hand as those questions got deeper and deeper, you know? And it was very possible someone was. I don't know. I didn't turn around. But to think that those situations where people kind of get caught up in those systems are so easy. It's not like the bad people are over here and the good people are over here.
Yes.
Those lines of good and bad are really hard to even think about, you know, those areas of gray. But to just think, okay, this much is true for me or people that I love, but this much more could have been true for them if
absolutely
whatever had not happened. Someone had not stepped in, someone had not paid the bill, someone, you know, whatever. And so that was a really powerful moment for me to think about. I don't know where the people that I'm even worshiping with and leading in worship, what their experiences have been. So
it is astounding. And that's why it's so important to go and be close to people and to learn from the people who are impacted by these policies and amplify their voice.
Mm-hmm.
I met a lady doing this project, which yesterday we were talking about our fines and fees advocacy effort.
Right.
And doing that work, I met an assortment of people who have had very difficult experiences because they were unable to pay certain fines, fees, costs, or assessments that were imposed as part of a surcharge, really, to the punishment that they already received. And one of the ladies, her name's Susan, she told me a story about her registration for her dogs. Mm. So all of her troubles started when she got tickets for not registering her dogs properly.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason her dogs weren't registered is because she didn't have enough money to get them properly vaccinated at the vet.
Mm-hmm.
So she had the registration penalties and the fines. She couldn't pay them. As a result of that, her driver's license was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't get back and forth to work.
Mm-hmm.
She drove anyway,
mm-hmm.
which some would say that's not a good choice.
Right.
Others would say you do what you have to do.
Right.
She had children and she needed to get to work. She felt she needed to get to work. She got caught driving while suspended and got more fines and fees and costs. Her license was suspended for an even longer period of time, and eventually she lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
She lost her job and she almost immediately became homeless.
Mm-hmm.
She was living with friends throughout. She would get job interviews, but ultimately she would then not be hired because she was still coming up as a wanted person.
Mm.
She had so much fear about trying to resolve this with the court that she hid.
Yeah,
she didn't have any insurance.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have any treatment for a mental health issue that she had always had, but had sufficiently controlled prior to this. And it's taken her years to get to the point now where she has somewhat stable housing and employment.
Mm.
But it took her about 3 years to recover from that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk to folks, her story is not even the most extreme.
Mm-hmm.
There is a gentleman I was talking to the other day who shared with me that he hasn't actually been in any trouble except for a jaywalking ticket for the last 12 years. But that doesn't mean he hasn't been to prison, because he is perpetually behind in paying fines that are over 12 years old.
Wow.
And the warrants issue for his arrest, and he's taken into custody. And the last time he was in custody, he was there for 32 days because there was some confusion with scheduling the date. As a result of his intermittent periods of incarceration, he's lost countless jobs.
Mm-hmm.
His vehicle was impounded because he had been arrested at that time while driving. No one else came to claim his vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
All of his tools for work were in his truck.
Mm.
And so when the vehicle was impounded and he was released from prison, he couldn't pay the release fees.
Mm-hmm.
He lost the vehicle. He lost all of his tools for work. He then lost his job. And then he became homeless.
Mm.
And it's taken him years to rebuild that.
Mm.
And so these, the impact that what we look at, people who have resources look at as annoying, inconvenient, mm-hmm. possibly deterrent types of criminal costs, mm-hmm. Are devastating
right.
for people who are right on the margins.
Mm-hmm.
And the proximity, the closeness, you don't know it until you ask people.
Right.
And they're so used to folks not listening to them
mm-hmm.
that it's very difficult even to convince them to tell their story,
right.
to amplify their voice so that folks can hear them.
So hearing those stories, it's so easy to kind of lose hope and feel like, well, if you're not working in the justice system, if you don't have, that liberation sort of training that to actually make a difference, to lose hope, to say to the regular everyday person, hey, you know, here are these stories. I was talking to somebody yesterday and they were like, well, the world's a terrible place and there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm like, meh. So what do you say when you hear that?
Oh, that breaks my heart.
I know. I was so sad.
Because
I was like, no.
The potential of all of us to come together
mm-hmm.
and make meaningful change to create the type of society that we want to live in
mm-hmm.
is limitless. Mm-hmm. What I tell people all the time is, as a society, we sent people to the moon
mm-hmm.
and brought them back alive.
Right.
When our highest technological advancement was essentially duct tape
mm-hmm.
and the computing power of your everyday iPod.
Yeah.
Right? When we are strongly committed as people,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing we can't achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're doing it in the pursuit of compassion
mm-hmm.
and love, then you have to trust also that a way is being made mm-hmm. ahead of you.
So what are things that people who feel that powerlessness or feel like they don't have the training to actually do a meaningful thing, what are some ways that they can sort of live into this work and live into the hope of freedom and justice?
Firstly, people who have no experience with the criminal legal system have a powerful voice
mm.
because they are not viewed as people who are trying to make it better just for themselves.
Mm, okay.
Right?
Right.
And so they have a very powerful voice to say, I live in this community and I cannot bear you treating my neighbors this way.
Mm, okay.
That what you do, what we do, that the state is doing that in all of our names.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When the Attorney General's office brings a charge against one of our neighbors,
mm-hmm.
it's the state of Delaware
mm-hmm.
versus that person.
Wow.
And so they are representing all of us.
Okay.
And if they're not representing us in the way that we want to be represented, if they're not treating our neighbor the way that we want them to treat our neighbor, and I don't just mean the AG's office, I mm-hmm. mean the entire system,
yeah.
then we're called to act.
Mm-hmm.
And by act, I mean get involved.
No.
Learn something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we can learn in all sorts of ways. For those of us who love the library, there's a ton of books and resources about mm-hmm. the criminal legal system. For those who learn best through experience, come out to a community event.
Mm-hmm.
Join the Smart Justice Coalition that's run by the ACLU.
Mm-hmm.
For folks who like canvassing, door knocking, there's Network Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
There are no limits to groups in the state of Delaware right now who are working to make our community better.
Mm.
And to that extent, now might be a good time for us to invite listeners
yes.
to a community panel and discussion on Thursday at the Church of Saints Andrew and Matthew on Shipley Street, 701 Shipley Street. And we are going to be talking about providing a space for the community to process the Netflix docuseries about the Central Park Five.
Mm-hmm.
It's called When They See Us. And we are co-hosting this event with our good friends at DETV
mm-hmm.
and want to provide the community with a space to process what is an experience that a lot of people know about
mm-hmm.
and then also is an experience that a lot of people don't know mm-hmm. about, and to bring everyone together to process this, mm-hmm. and also to talk directly about legislation that is pending this session that can help reduce the likelihood of wrongful conviction in the state of Delaware, that can provide financial compensation for people who have been wrongfully convicted in our state mm-hmm. and have been incarcerated on account of that wrongful conviction, and also provide protections for young people who are convicted of superior court offenses mm-hmm. so that no child in the state of Delaware will be housed in the Department of Correction Level 5 facility after January 1st of 2021.
So for those of us who kind of don't know the lingo, what is why do we not want children housed in a level 5 facility?
Sure. Children are children.
Okay.
Regardless of what behavior we might observe in them, regardless of what crime they may have committed, their brains are still not fully developed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know from years of neuroscience research is that the adolescent brain is not fully developed until around age 25.
Mm-hmm.
And when we place youth in adult facilities,
mm-hmm.
we subject them to traumatic conditions mm-hmm. of confinement,
mm-hmm.
not just in the exchange or possible dangers of being housed in mm-hmm. a facility with adults, but also in the separation and segregation
mm.
that is necessary to comply with keep safe provisions.
Mm.
Children have to be sight and sound separated from adults, which for some kids mean that they're housed in virtual isolation.
Mm. Okay.
Children are not supposed to commingle mm-hmm. with adult offenders because they are physically much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
They are likely to be abused. They are subject to the trauma of adult prison,
mm-hmm.
which no one is built for prison,
mm-hmm.
particularly children.
Mm. One of the things that I've been kind of thinking about as you were talking is sort of that power of thinking about our neighbors and who our neighbors are and hearing their stories and really just making space for that, because that's sort of the work that y'all are doing at the event on Thursday is hearing the story of some neighbors. Now, they might not be geographical neighbors, but they could be. You know, I don't know who all's stories are being shared there, but these are people that you interact with. And if it's not that particular story, it's someone connected to you. You sort of can't make a bubble
absolutely
so small that you don't intersect with someone who this impacts, you know, this work of justice impacts in some way.
Absolutely.
So
the intergenerational impact and mm-hmm. the ripple effect of incarceration, I don't know that we've ever really gotten a full handle on it
mm-hmm.
here. But what we observe is that arrest and incarceration is a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
It's a community affair. When we remove a person from a space that they were occupied
mm-hmm.
and place them somewhere else, yes, we do some harm to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But we also impact every other person that the person who's now incarcerated was responsible for.
Right.
Every person they were involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And now that person who's been impacted is now an injured person
mm, mm-hmm.
who's now interfacing with everyone else.
Mm.
And so as an example, one of the things that we work on here at DCJ is to facilitate ongoing relationships between children and their parents
mm-hmm.
when their parents are incarcerated.
Mm.
We do this for a number of reasons. One is because it actually reduces recidivism.
Mm-hmm.
Having strong family ties actually helps people behave a little better while they're incarcerated
mm-hmm.
and reduces the likelihood that they will reoffend upon release
mm.
because they have a support system to catch them
mm-hmm.
when they come out of prison. And we do that through a love of literacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's our read-in, read-out program
okay.
where people who are incarcerated sign up to read books to their children.
Oh.
And we record their reading,
mm-hmm.
And then we provide the book and the recording
Aww.
To the child.
That's
And this promotes both a love of reading for kids. We focus specifically on children who are younger, though a lot of them are eligible, because we also know that kids are learning to read up until third grade. But after third grade, they're reading to learn. And so when you're building literacy capacity, you want to do it by the time they hit third grade so that they don't fall behind. And this helps reduce the likelihood that a child will have problems at school, become frustrated, have behavioral discipline problems, be subject to school discipline, and possibly fall behind and be less likely to graduate on time and have educational achievement. We also host events with the children and their primary caregivers to give the caregivers a little bit of a respite because there's a lot of responsibility in taking care of children when one of the parents is removed from the home. All of the recorded readings of the books have to be supervised by a volunteer because the people who are incarcerated are not allowed to have access to the recording equipment without supervision. So we're always looking for volunteers to sit with folks as they read books to their children.
Wow. It's powerful. One of the things that we sort of, you and I had talked about before, but I wanted to kind of think about together in this space, is the idea of the words, speaking the words out loud and talking about people being incarcerated and really moving away from that shame-based kind of theology that, that some people have internalized of, you know, we've talked about, we talk about in the church helping the prisoners in the biblical sense, but when it actually comes to it, oh, now we can't talk about actual prison like that. There's a disconnect there. So without getting myself into too much trouble, I just wondered if we could kind of spend a few minutes thinking about, have you experienced that disconnect between the hypothetical imprisoned and the those who are incarcerated and that work?
So I think it's important always to focus on the language that we use, right? And that when people can talk about people in prison as inmates, as convicts, as felons, as ex-felons, as ex-offenders, when they return to the community, they create this natural barrier of different than me, right? That this person is different from me and somehow less than me, right? And we struggle to recognize, and I think as a community, as a faith-based community and also as a larger community, to balance holding someone accountable for something that they've done.
Right.
And recognizing that we believe in second chances, that we believe that people have the capacity to change. And as Christians, I think that no one recognizes and accepts and believes about the capacity to change more than someone who firmly believes in Paul's story.
Right?
That there are moments where people are confronted and convicted, and their lives are never the same. And yet when people come home from prison or are released from prison, we don't extend that grace. We don't extend that acceptance that not only are they capable of change, but we will presume that they have. And we see it... we joke a little bit here and say it would be a lot easier if we were always fundraising for puppies.
Look, puppies.
Or children. And to say that we are fundraising to provide housing assistance for people who are coming out of prison because they have nothing and they need a security deposit and they have no credit because it's hard to get credit when you've been in prison for 7 years.
Right.
And that we are fundraising because we need some unrestricted funds to help folks obtain stable housing. Because we know if we can get them housing, then maybe some of this other stuff will fall into place. And that's a harder group to fundraise for. And yet if you care about public safety, you actually care about making the transition as easy as possible for people who are returning to the community from prison. Delaware has one of the highest rates of recidivism certainly on the East Coast, certainly among our neighboring states. And I believe that one of the reasons our recidivism rate is so high is that we have so many collateral consequences mm-hmm. for conviction that serve as absolute barriers right. to successful reentry. Mm-hmm. And our advocacy efforts have focused on reducing many of those collateral convictions. And I have to give our legislature a lot of credit mm-hmm. because they have been willing to learn. Mm-hmm. And wow. when they participated in reentry simulations mm-hmm. about what it is actually to leave the gate
yeah.
of the prison, what that is, mm-hmm. and where do you go, mm-hmm. and what do you do first, mm-hmm. right? Because they have lots of needs. Paulette Rappa, who does The Way Home in Sussex County, I think she says it best because she says, you know, people always ask her what people need. Mm-hmm. Do they need socks? Do they need clothes? Do they need rides? Do they need ID? Do they need housing?
Right.
Yes.
All of it.
Yes, all of it. But what they really need is empathy. Mm-hmm. What they really need is for people to be comfortable and accepting of them mm-hmm. and sit next to them at a table. Mm. What they really need is to feel part and parcel mm-hmm. of a community.
Wow.
They need community and not condemnation. Mm-hmm. And you expect the best mm-hmm. out of people. And they almost always give it to you. Mm-hmm.
So if someone is looking for something to do right now, and you're listening to it when this episode gets released, which is around on the week of June, the dates that it is now, 17th-ish. So what are events that are happening sure. right now? If you feel so convicted, what can we do?
We have an extraordinarily busy legislative session.
Okay.
And so if folks would like to reduce a barrier to people in obtaining employment and would like to contact their legislature about Senate Bill 123, it's going to be in the House Public Safety Committee on Wednesday at 2:30. So we're asking folks to let their legislators know how they feel on the 18th of June, on the 19th of June, and on the 20th of June. Because this bill prohibits the automatic suspension of driving privileges mm. for people who fall behind on their fines, fees, costs, and assessments, so that they're not faced with the choice of having to drive to work, having to drive to pick up their kids, and knowing that they're suspended. Mm. There's also our community event this Thursday. Please come out. Please come out and ask questions. Please come out and listen to other people's questions. Mm-hmm. Please come out and meet your neighbors, mm-hmm. other people who care about transforming the criminal legal system. It's at the Church of Saints Andrew and Matthew
yes.
at 701 North Shipley.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being
6:30
here.
6:30 to 8.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing your stories, for sharing the stories of others and the work that you're doing. I'm really thankful for this time.
Thank you yeah. for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Riverfront Church Podcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com. or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.